digital divide is a statement that we kind of thought we'd consign maybe to the early part of the 21st century, but no, it's still there, and there does seem to be a big separation in terms of why small businesses are not actually taking advantage of the wonderful virtual world of electronic communications and websites and more. To address this and talk about why, actually, it's pretty good tactics to actually consider having a website. Indeed, it's essential you should have a website. We're delighted to welcome business manager extraordinaire, author of 15 texts and the whole thing, generally an all-round wonderful person, GoDaddy's vice president based in London. That's Stefano Moruzzi. Stefano, how are you?
Good morning.
Excellent to touch base with your good self. Now, this research from GoDaddy suggested that 54% of small businesses without a website fear that their business will fail to grow within the next 3 to 5 years. So what are they going to be doing about it?
Hopefully, they're going to face the challenge and build a website or a digital presence anytime soon. Mm. It's never been easier to build a digital identity, and it's very affordable and plenty of alternatives.
Is it an essential in the modern age in terms of whatever business you might be thinking about, whether it's a craft business, whether it's a kind of consultancy business? Is a website something which, in a sense, the customers would automatically expect to actually have their website details of the prospective company?
I guess so. So the other day I was signing some papers at the lower office here in London, and it took me a few minutes. At the end, I started a conversation, and basically we were talking about CPC and how his business is acquiring new customers through digital activities, and he was considering investing more money because this is the best way for him to acquire new prospects and clients. So I guess it's a very simple anecdote, but it's becoming pervasive. And we know we use technologies, primarily mobile devices, regularly, every day, multiple hours per day. And I think it would be natural for businesses to be on the same platforms.
Absolutely. So what are the kind of key tips that people should be looking for? Because, you know, there are folk, I mean, most of us would, I suspect, know what a website actually is. If you're setting up a small business, you'll have an awareness of this. But what would you actually suggest? Would it be go to GoDaddy? Would it be a case of seek a professional software developer? What's the next step forward?
Yeah, so researching online, I think it's probably the best initial step. There are plenty of alternatives, as I said, and securing a domain name, probably the first suggestion. It's going to be your business name, your business address in the internet namespace. And then after that, you need to build a digital presence. So building a simple website with a very affordable and easy-to-use tools is step number two. And then from there, you can grow. You want to introduce e-commerce functionalities. There are modules that can be plugged in, so you can support financial transactions and manage your orders and so on.
Is it important to acknowledge that when you set up the website, that's not the end of it? You need to keep the website updated, because there's nothing that's actually sadder than an unloved website that still has yesteryear's content on it.
Yeah, definitely. So becoming visible, so investing a little bit in social media, and that means not necessarily investing money, but even just time in order to update your content and share your content through these digital avenues. And some of those are very popular and for free. It's clearly another good suggestion.
So things relating to obviously Twitter, various packages that you got with Instagram, and probably even the Facebook scenario would be worthwhile considering.
Absolutely. So think about a bakery, right? And your products are perfect subjects for images that can be shared and become the subject of some viral activity among users in your neighborhoods or even internationally.
And YouTube, or is that a step too far?
Well, it's possible in these days, for example, to produce or self-produce animated videos for few pounds per month. Often these services are offered in the form of annual membership, but I'm talking about maybe £200 per year. So it's definitely affordable. An animation video could be an easy way to explain what you do, what type of services you offer. Then regarding video production, again, scalability, I think it's the main word around the internet. You can start small, you can do it by yourself, or you could crowdsource your idea and be put in contact with the creative minds sitting all over the place producing a video for you. In this case, it could cost £1,000.
We cover a lot of small businesses and arts and crafts companies, ranging from the exhibitors at the Lincolnshire Agricultural Society, the Lincolnshire Show, the Great Yorkshire Show, and beyond. Would you ultimately say that no matter what the size of the business, it's pretty much essential that a website is part and parcel of the profile that small businesses actually are demonstrating?
Yeah, the short answer is yes. You expect your friends, your family to be online, and you communicate with them primarily through messages, email, and through social media. Mm-hmm. And why would it be different from a business perspective, right? When you need a service, when you need a product, you first gonna search online, and if your business is online, there's a chance you're gonna be found.
And are you finding, Stefano, that when you actually deliver keynote speeches and obviously travel the globe, that internationally there are differences between countries? For instance, is Italy a lot better and quicker at getting online than parts of Britain, or is it a case of it's all much of a muchness?
Actually, you pick up a wrong example. Italy is well behind Great Britain, and it's been a struggle since the very beginning. So, yeah, there are differences, though. If you think about, for example, Africa has leapfrogged the initial portion of the internet development, and it's 100%, almost 100% mobile phenomenon, right? Same in India. The infrastructure in these two continent or subcontinent is such or lacking of infrastructure that mobile was the only solution. So even in terms of application services, they were conceived and developed having in mind this type of usage. United States, clearly very pervasive. It's natural to think that everything has to be online.
I was trying to avoid, obviously, despite your connection with Microsoft, I was thinking, well, actually, Silicon Valley, they tended to sort of progress from that point of view. But it's an interesting world. Stefano, it's been fabulous touching base with your good self. Finally, do people actually go online to find out more? Would you actually counsel any website to go to the GoDaddy website, for instance? Would that be the best way forward if people are listening to this and want to find out a bit more information?
Yeah, I guess going to goodidea.co.uk would be a smart move. And then there are plenty of documents, tutorials, videos that can help people frame an idea and understand what is required in order to go online and build a digital identity.
Makes perfect sense. And indeed, if they're online, they can even download this as a podcast and listen again to the whole package. So it just shows the magic of technology. Stefano, fantastic touching base with your good self. I trust you've had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us. Has it been okay for you, sir?
Yeah, it's been great. Thank you.
So hopefully we can prevail upon you to join us in the not-too-distant future and keep us appraised of what's happening in terms of the digital divide, which hopefully is shrinking even as we speak.
Will disappear.
You're quite right. If an Italian tells you that, then it will. Stefano Maruzzi there, talking in behalf of his capacity as main spokesman for the Microsoft Group in Italy and beyond. So, tales, stories and such like. Dr. Lanceval Ratatok is a squirrel. Not only a squirrel, but a doctor squirrel. In the tradition of Ratatoks, one of his twin sons, Rancid, is a dustman. The other, Locrin, is a postman. But Locrin is also a rather fine poet and an object of amour for the lady squirrels. Notice the way I broke into the French accent there, Darren.
It's very impressive. It's very good. Yeah.
In a highly inventive and unusual book, Peter Asher offers in Lyrical Mallards a set of squirrel stories like no other. Squirrel stories! This is what we've been waiting for. A Walter Potter assembly of animals assisting the Ratatoks as they negotiate unicorns. The Wood Cup football competition. See what I did there? Genius! Poetry and drug-dealing hares. Sharp intake. Amongst many other trials that come along in the average squirrel's day. Our caller has gone offline.
Oh,
he's
no.
gone offline with the sheer shock of obviously sort of working through this.
It was too much for him.
Too much. Those squirrels clearly have sort of sent him offline and everything. I tell you what, we will try and get Peter Asher back with us. If you're waiting for Eric Ninehouse, well, so are we. But he hasn't been around. We just left a message on his voicemail. Life continues. This, talking about music, is what I feel you should feature as a soundtrack to The Drift, because somehow I feel this is what it lacks. It lacks very little, has to be said. But if I was to actually just say one thing that you could just give a little bit more magic to, it's right in the heart of real traumatic times within the whole field. Maybe just break into this on the soundtrack. Mm-hmm.
sing, sing a song, sing out loud, sing out strong, sing a song. Just sing, sing a song.
Ideal not only for the Drift, but probably for Lyrical Mallards as well. Now, fingers crossed, Peter Asher will be with us. Is that right, Peter Asher? Are you there?
I am here.
Hey! For a moment, I thought it was just too much to expect to go to Scunthorpe after we'd done Nashville and California. You know,
it's, oh, you know, my God, good grief. Yeah. No. It's a bit of a come down for you.
Hey,
no,
listen. Scunthorpe has given the world, in no particular order of importance, Ray Clements, Kevin right. Keegan, Peter right. Asher.
Well, I remember seeing Ray Clements and Keegan, yes, when yeah. I was... When I was young and went to football matches.
Well, yep. Exactly, and that's probably what inspired the Wood Cup football competition. The Wood Cup football competition. This is just going down a storm, Peter. I mean, you've tapped into something here, which, I mean, those of us who've been squirrel aficionados for years, I know there's issues about the red squirrel and the grey squirrel, etc. But many of my happy college undergraduate days were spent talking to squirrels. It's probably the reason I became the person I am today. A squirrel talker. But in terms of, they're not tree rats, they're lovable creatures. In terms of Lyrical Mallards, aren't people expecting ducks and suddenly it's a squirrel?
Well, more or less, that's what's going to happen.
Ooh.
Yes.
Genetically mutated squirrels.
Oh, no. Spoilers.
Well, no, not really. It's just that it's the way that one of the stories work. Lyrical Mallards is really a take on Samuel Taylor Coleridge and William Wordsworth. 1798 collection, Lyrical Ballads. So it's a kind of a take on this. Only this is written by, to further complicate the issue, Lyrical Mallards is written by Samuel Taylor Coltit and William Words Mouse.
Hey! You know, this is what English literature students should be studying, postgraduate and undergraduate degrees.
Yeah. Yeah, well, it's somewhat convoluted because you'll have to get the book and read the book to be able to see the tie-in with Lachlan Rattock, the good doctor, Dr. Langeville Rattock's son, who is a poet, plus a post squirrel. His day job is to post things in the wood, if you like, this lost wood in darkest Lincolnshire. But he also happens to be a poet, and he's getting pretty well known. And, well, there you go, anyway. It's one of the stories in Lyrical Mallard. It's the title story.
I mean, the movie rights, Dan. Daz, you must be sort of fighting for them already, I think.
Well, no, I doubt it very much, but there you go.
No, seriously, Peter, he's a filmmaker. I mean, I think, you know, there's mileage in this. You could have a whole open opportunity for that. And I can see Phil Leonis listening in California at this present time, you know, in the mind's eye, thinking, yeah, forget, you know, the truth is out there, Ancient Mysteries 2. You know, forget the sequel to the Lady Killers. It's Lyrical Mallards with a cast of squirrels. Just think of the role they could have for Fuzz Aldrin in there.
Would it be CGI or actual real?
Oh no,
squirrels?
we'd have to train the squirrels.
Yeah, I think that's best.
Yeah,
you know.
Definitely. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, well, no, not in this particular wood.
Oh, they're untrainable.
The lost wood in darkest Lincolnshire, and well, everybody knows where they're coming from. In fact, if you like, it's like Animal Farm in reverse, I suppose. But the animals don't learn off humans. It's the other way round, that we learnt off the animals. But everything that we call society, and even to language, the animals were there first. But we, our intelligence is nowhere near as acute and cunning, although I don't know, we're pretty devious.
They look after us, you know. They allow us to cohabit this planet with us, you know. They kind of they laugh at our strange and bizarre human mammalian waves, but you know, it's what they do. Earlier, of course, Peter, you're known for the fantastic novel Waiting for Pat, in which the line, forget reality, join in the make-believe world of a five-year-old boy until somehow the line between the real world and his world disappears and you are held by his story. Poorly boy, whose real name seems to have been forgotten, is just that. He's poorly with a heart condition, and his experiences in hospital seem to lead him naturally to establishing his own garden shed infirmary, specialising in the treatment and care of damaged soft toys he has found or been given. Now, Jessica, I mean, you know Spike, our location report mascot. I mean, this sounds right up his street.
That does, actually. We should definitely get him. You should write a book about him. Oh, that would be fantastic.
We'll get Spike in. I'll show you photographs on our Facebook site, Peter, of Spike. I can even introduce you to Floppy. It's not a euphemism. It's actually my very first cubby toy. He needs the stuffing to put back in, really. But sorry, I'm revealing perhaps too much, really, Daz, at this particular moment in time. But
I'm totally comfortable. It's okay.
If you can't share, you know, you can't share how that makes it. I have to say, hats off, of course, to the fabulous publishers, etc., for even promoting the fact that you're on Siren FM at this very moment in time, Peter.
Yes. Very
organised. A highly invented and unusual book Peter Asher offers in Lyrical Mallards, a set of squirrel stories like no other, as we've just identified. So thankfully, at least no trains in there, Peter.
Oh, no. No trains. No. No, there isn't really room for trains. There's quite a bit going on in the stories.
I mean, in terms of the actual book cover, because, I mean, we're very much taken with the image of
Austin McCauley. It's a beautiful cover, really.
I mean, that sums up. If you're in hospital, you'd like to be trapped by a doctor who's got that kind of level of creativity.
Well, I was. Poorly Boy is me, actually. It's very much autobiographical. yeah, and Waiting for Pat. Pat was a little girl who, when I went into hospital in the late 1940s, I had the leg in traction for 14 months. And during that period, in those days, it was just outside Sheffield, actually, Reigate, where I was incarcerated with the leg in traction for 14 months. And in those days, your parents were only allowed to visit perhaps twice a week at most. So I just felt completely deserted. And this little girl, they pushed a bed next to mine, and she bossed me, and she pushed the little dolls in front of me, and she was lovely. She really mothered me, and she had a profusion of Pre-Raphaelite golden hair and these great fish lens spectacles. One morning, there was blinds drawn round the bed, and when they opened, Pat wasn't there, but the bed was made. She died. She was absolutely riddled with cancer. And because she was my only friend in there, I've always felt that somehow or other I had to pay her a tribute.
That's fantastic.
So Poorly Boy is myself. Yeah. You never find out his name. She comes back in a dream to Poorly Boy and gives him a mission. And the mission is to collect together a little team of soft toys and work from garden shed infirmary, which his dad gracefully gives him. His mission is to, first of all, heal soft toys and then move out from there and attend to insects, and from insects to progress to pets, domestic pets, friends, neighbours, and from there to heal humanity. So,
I mean, this is a very special day for a number of reasons. Not only is it the last midweek drive of September 2015 ever, that's going to a time machine, you know, we'll be back in October, don't worry. I'm back tomorrow morning for the 1st of October in the midweek drive morning edition. Not only is it the official 50th anniversary of Thunderbirds actually emerging amongst all RTS, today is the day where it's first screened. Yeah. We would be most remiss with our good friend, colleague, Jamie Anders, of course, if we didn't flag that up solidly, and we will. We have special tributes coming up to that. But it's the day in which Lyrical Mallards is published. It's available from now, the 30th of September. Today is the day it's being released.
Here.
Exactly. You don't have to wait.
An unexpectant world. Absolutely.
You do not have to wait anymore. You don't have to pre-order it. You can order it now online and get your copy. And it's $5.99. Surely there's a decimal mistake there. $5.99 for Lyrical Mallards. Peter Asher. Outrageous. But that's just a first editions, of course. Think of it as an investment. Yeah. That's the important thing. Jessica, any other questions you've got for Peter Asher?
Well, I just want to say it sounds really charming. I absolutely love it. And I really hope it all goes well and you sell loads of copies.
Well, thank you, Jessica. I really appreciate your well wishes and the fact that you've gone to all the trouble to interview me like this.
Oh, bless.
That's the kind of station we are, yeah. Basically. That's why we're East Midlands Radio Station of the Year, I like to feel.
Well, I can well imagine. I'll never forget.
Well, and Darren, any thoughts from yourself? I mean, I'm welling up here.
It's been emotional. what's next? What's on the horizon?
Yes. I mean, are we looking at a third book? I mean, we moved, obviously, the lyrical malice.
Not really, because I'm a poet. First and foremost, but waiting for Pat, I felt I had to do it, yeah. to settle a debt owed to her, a very poor little girl. And as regards lyrical mallards, it was just something that happened. Actually, after reading A.S. Byatt's Possession, a marvellous novel, but I would bore you to death if I went on. It's a convoluted story about how it came round to the ashtray.
Peter, it's been an absolute joy connecting with you, good self, today. And I've got to ask, Scunthorpe is in Lincolnshire, so I've got to ask the question. First of all, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on this, your show debut? Has it been okay for you, sir?
It's been wonderful.
So the next thing is...
It has been a privilege to speak to both of you, it really has.
Three of us, really. I mean, you've got Darren, you've got Jessica, and yours truly, Alex Levchuk. So, as you're not that far away, will you come into the studio one of these days in the near future? Will you join us in the studio?
I would love to join you in the studio.
Jessica, shall we get Peter Asher in the studio with his lyrical manners? Yay!
Definitely, yes.
Peter, we'll get that sorted. It's absolutely sensational. We're back off to America now, hopefully to speak to Phil Leonis, and in keeping with the Rugby World Cup...
I looked over Jordan, what did I see? Coming for to carry me home. It was a band of God's angels coming after me. Coming for to carry me home.
In the musical version of The Drift, not only would you have the Carpenters singing sing, you'd also wrap up with the serious moment of the Jordanaires and Swing Low Sweet Chariot. I mean, that's my kind of grand theme, so, or suggestion, really, Des. You don't have to go on with it, but you know.
Oh, well, I'll consider that.
Take it under advisement. Way forward.
Okay, yeah.
I don't know, I'll incorporate it into The Lady Killers. That suggests we should be contacting Phil Leonis. Yes, he's there! Phil Leonis! Good morning, how's California?
It's dry and hot, and I don't know what else to tell you.
Well, that's okay.
Blind as a bat and out of control. How about that?
Oh, I love Star Trek IV, which isn't one of the masterclass package of movies that we'll be talking about next week, because I'm very excited that Phil put up on Facebook that, yes, he's rewatched Logan's Run in preparation for, Daz, what we were talking about with you earlier, the series of half-hour podcasts which will accompany masterclass screenings at the University of Lincoln's very own MTech, superlative East Midlands Technological Standard MTech building, which people can actually come and see great movies. And great science fiction movies, more to the point. So that's to come, though. But on a show which sadly didn't manage to connect with Eric Nienhuis, because we got his answer phone twice, but and his emails bounced back, we still have Cameron Tilbury, Anna Lewis, Annette Andre, Jake Morley, Janine Barry, Peter Asher, and indeed Stefano, our Italian Microsoft person, before we even start thinking about should we play Jessica a version of the Haka. Where's Phil Leonis going to take us in the 24 or 23 minutes that's now left to actually sort of work his magic? Phil, the floor is yours.
Well, we've got to talk about squirrels.
Of course.
The producer of my film, my documentary, The Truth Is Out There, is quite the squirrel aficionado. At the time when we were making the film, had a pet squirrel that he had nursed back to health. And it became very spooky, because when I was editing the film, if I went outside for a few minutes, squirrels would always come up to me. And I would ask them, did Lyle send you to make sure that I'm still working? And then they would chirp and run away, like the message had been delivered. So, yes, and of course, Eric Roberts, the great actor Eric Roberts, who is in The Truth Is Out There as well, he, I guess, you know, big fan of squirrels as pets. So,
and, of course, he was the master in the Paul McGann incarnation of Doctor Who, the Eighth Doctor.
A squirrel was?
Eric Roberts.
Oh, okay.
Easily confused. So,
now, on the other hand, it must be pointed out that Lyle, our producer, has since become a talent agent in Hollywood, so we've lost him to the dark side. You know why they bury talent agents 10 feet deep, deeper than usual coffins, right? You know why they bury
them? They need the extra 10%?
No, because down deep, they're good.
hey-ho. Anyway, I mean...
You know, he's a talent agent, but of course he has to tell his parents that he plays piano in a brothel. So, okay, I've got...
I sense some tenseness coming out here. I sense almost the scriptwriter...
Come on, come on. You know, the thing about being an agent, I mean, the thing is that, you know, if you ever meet anyone who's, like, probably a really nice, polite, kind, gentle agent, you meet someone who's completely ineffective. That's the thing, right? Because you want someone who's going to be a really, really aggressive advocate on your behalf. So it's... I kid and I tease. Now, what happened? Did we not get the interview about Star Trek?
No, is the short answer. No, because it seemed to be set up, but in my testing email, I said, all okay, that was bounced back twice. And then two telephone calls, which Darren will witness to, we actually made answer phone on both occasions.
He's on an away mission, I think. Yeah.
And actually, we didn't reach Anna Lewis either, so... Anyway, it's one for the Trek scenarios. Jessica,
why don't we talk about it anyway? Talk about it as if you'd done the interview. What is Star Trek Equinox?
It is a working pilot with a number of classic science fiction actors. Darren, you've checked the thing out. How would you define the Star Trek?
It's an advanced fan film. It's not. It's more than that. It's definitely more than that. They've got the actors from the classic series expanding the universe, and that's not uncommon. There's a lot of Star Trek Intrepid. There's a few other franchises, and another, Walter Koenig and the others. You know, George Takei, I think, has been involved in some of them. Tim Russ too. So it can only be a good thing. I haven't actually seen any of the actual footage or the clips, but anything at Trek and people are investing their time, love and money into, can only be a good thing.
Exactly. Yeah. So I'll go to the Drift scenario, which is ever onwards. You have watched The Drift, have you not, Phil Leonis?
Of course.
Good. That's all right. Do you think it would work better with the Carpenters' background music in there, and a little touch of Swing Low Sweet Chariot to open the whole thing through? Or would you say no?
Well, interesting how you try to build up the Carpenters by throwing in Swing Low Sweet Chariot.
Yeah,
that's some dirty pool right there. Because aside from saying that it's kind of unfair for me to follow a song that sounds like the end of the show, because it really did seem like I was going, wow, okay, that was actually one of my more enjoyable segments on the show. It was shorter than I thought. Oh wait, we haven't gotten to me yet. The Carpenters, might be best suited not being in any film.
Well,
a biopic, perhaps.
I don't know. I thought using On Top of the World in Dark Shadows with, of course, Shane Rimmer and, of course, Johnny Depp, etc. That worked. It worked with the vampire, the version of Dark Shadows. I'm on top of the world, I thought. And that actually triggered off this whole notion of what other movies would benefit from a little blast of the Carpenters.
As much as an odd and unplanned topic as this is, I would love to hear Darren's take on this, because it's something that I've thought about when films are set, let's say in the future, in this, in Darren's case, space, but in any kind of future, I always find they get into trouble when the characters are listening to music. And, it's for the longest time, time, the same kind of trouble films would get in when they depicted what fashions would be like in the future, right? Like all men would wear the same suit, and, you know.
Yeah.
But music is still problematic, and I was wondering what your take is. Have you ever thought about like what the characters would listen to if you had the rights to any music? Or would you create your own and try to make it be something forward-thinking?
Yeah, it's something I have thought about. We're working on, since Jeff, working on some new projects which are still in the same universe. And although Guardians of the Galaxy kind of took my idea, as well as other franchises taking on my... Well, they got there first, basically. One of my ideas was a captain, a guy called Mac, who is in charge of a cruiser called the Black Bess, which is Dick Turpin's horse. He listens to 50s music. That was his thing. And one of my thoughts, why I came to that decision, was kind of twofold. The first one was because my dad, you know, he listened to 50s music, so for me it was what I used to listen to when I was a kid, but also because it's already in the past. So if you put something in the future with music that's already in the past, that kind of already is classic. And Guardians did that with some, obviously some success. But I was thinking about like the classic Battlestar Galactica, especially the pilot episode when they go into the planet of entertainment, and the music that's playing there is Love, 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 you know, again, which is written, I believe, for Battlestar, or certainly taken at the same time.
Glenn Larson and Stu Phillips.
Yeah, absolutely. And then looking at Next Gen and some of the music they put in there, and you're right, it immediately becomes dated, even though it's meant to be sort of futuristic, but it's futuristic 80s or futuristic 70s. So it's a difficult one. Yeah. It's a difficult one. What are you trying to convey? And does it become a point of distraction for your audience, especially when you watch the film, you know, in the future? But then, hey, visual effects are the same, I suppose, aren't they? You watch Back to the Future, you know, awesome, fantastic movie, but yeah, you can see some of the limitations just by virtue of the time, but it's still a fantastic film. Mm. Perhaps it could be the same for music.
Exactly, because I think the deal with effects, though, is that not all people, obviously. Look, there's people who can't watch a black and white movie, but for the most part, when you sit down to watch a movie and it establishes how it was made, you're willing to suspend disbelief.
But
there are still things that will pull you out of it because you're just shaking your head, you know. Exactly, the 1970s or the 1980s version of what the future will sound like can really pull you out of it.
Yes.
And especially because we went through that period where all movie music was synthesized.
Yeah.
Because that was so much less expensive than like a big orchestra. And of course now, here we are 30 years later, and no, actually, you know what, technology is a lot more expensive than people. And so it's cheaper to actually have an orchestra playing your music than to have synthesized music. So it's a really interesting thing. But I love the idea. I always think that what makes sense is, and I think Kubrick, you know, understood this, right, in his movies, when he could set them in some undetermined time and they wouldn't be dated by the choices, because what he would pick would be so iconic and also resonate with us in some deeply emotional way. And it makes sense, right, that look at right now, we have access to almost all music ever produced just by going online.
Yeah.
And so we're not going to limit ourselves to what's just contemporary. We're not going to limit ourselves to this decade. We may not even limit ourselves to this and the past century. We may be going really far back suddenly to explore classical and opera because we can. And so I think in a future, wouldn't it only be more that way? And there's the possibility if you start to introduce iconic music, well, then you could introduce during it music that you've produced originally for the film or the television show, and it would pass muster because.
I was going to say, if you talk about the future, but I mean, I think it depends what type of future you're talking about. In a positive future, where things are expanding, getting better and better,
right?
The trend seems to be unfortunately, but mine's the same. That, you know, the future is different. It isn't what it is now, and there's less of stuff, you know. So again, back to Guardians, or you know, not as much the post-apocalyptic, but places where things are more remote, where things are less available, then you're kind of restricted about what is available. But in a positive one, I mean, and Star Trek ultimately is positive, for example, you know, a better future, etc., that you're absolutely right, there should be more and more. I mean, I've heard more varieties of music, you know, in the last 5 years by virtue of things like the internet than I did before, because all I got was the top 30.
I'll test that one, because apropos of the Thunderbird celebration that we've been having, we could have actually gone
five four, three, two, one.
But we're not, okay? We are.
If it was a post-apocalyptic universe, the only music that would have survived is the Carpenters.
Or maybe from the 80s, the band that launched themselves as We've Got a Fuzzbox and We're Going to Use It. The band Fuzzbox International Rescue. Okay, enough's enough already. I can hear Jamie Anderson saying, what, where, celebrating the whole thing? But, you know, you kind of had a sort of level. We could always have gone back to...
Thunderbirds are go.
But we won't. And then we'll be back. There'll be lots more sort of good stuff. Of course, next year, Captain Scarlet celebrating various other bits of pieces. Phil, we haven't forgotten you because we know that you're secretly coping with, rather like Britain, the USA having difficult results in the Rugby World Cup.
I barely understood a word you said. It was like you were speaking a foreign language to me.
Well, have you encountered the Haka?
I don't. What is that?
Right. What?
You say, Jessica, it's time.
Are
to,
you serious,
it's time
Phil?
For you to wear those Antipodean credentials with pride. We know that Dean Haglund is down in Australia, but really, to claim that he doesn't know what the Haka is from New Zealand's perspective, mm-hmm. Jessica, put him right, please.
It's actually pronounced Haka.
Haka, right?
Haka,
okay.
From Māori.
I'm not hot on the pronunciations.
That's okay,
as M. Night Shyamalan will actually work through.
I'll excuse you. That's fine. That's all right. At least you know what the Haka is, so that's okay. But yeah, it's just like a traditional war dance that. Here we go now.
Yeah.
Here we go.
Talk us through this, Jessica.
So basically, it's a tribal dance, and it's to show authority and show, well, we can take you on if you're gonna bring it on, then you know what, we'll take it. And so it's become a tradition for the All Blacks to do it before every game.
Bring it on. None of this padding for American football.
Yeah.
Bring on the Haka. That's us all along.
We're not wusses. We're not wusses.
Exactly. And there you have it, Phil.
Yeah. There was a... we were introduced to it here in the States when the New Zealand national team played the U.S. in the Basketball World Championships. Mm-hmm. And they did it beforehand. And so the little viral thing that actually wasn't online, it was on TV that went around all the time, was them doing this intimidating dance and then cutting to the final score where the U.S. beat them by like 90.
Yeah.
So that was kind of our introduction to it. Yeah. And the American players not being able to stop laughing while they were watching.
It is quite amusing, I have to say.
Any other sport we're absolutely rubbish at, I'm afraid. Especially football. Or soccer, sorry. I'm not very good at that.
Keep going, Phil. We still haven't squeezed in the Universe Today's thought.
Well, I mean, you could go to that now if you want.
Do you want to?
17.
Yeah. Oh, we're going for 70. Any reason for 17? Because I was very close to actually playing Paul Hardcastle and Nunna 19 earlier, but you know, obviously you thought, well, I felt an 80s vibe after the early part of the show. He's kept very quiet about.
Yeah, and by all means, let's end a lovely show about a song that's about the average age of the combat soldier who died in Vietnam. Yeah, that's pleasant.
Once you make up your
have
mind
a nice day.
And start something, commit to it, say yes, and never look back. Do you have any doubt? Any whatsoever, that I will not rush to your side, that legions won't be summoned, that players won't be drawn to your corner, connections made, circumstances crafted, dots connected, that the course of history won't be irrevocably changed? Good. I didn't think so. I'd say you're ready. The universe.
Sorted, as the squirrels would say.
That's my favorite one. That's my favorite one. I'm glad that I had that memorized, that that was 17.
Darren, any questions you'd like to put to Phil Linus? Because it's been such a long time since you last spoke to him.
Well, yeah, the last time we spoke, he was saying to me about the Drift and what I should be doing and being proud of my movies and stuff. And it really resonated with me, and that's what we have been doing. I don't know if you've been following us at all, Phil, but we've been making a new movie, this short film, this summertime, called Dark Wave, Edge of the Storm. And it's a continuation from The Drift, a different part of the universe, but the same universe.
And Shane Rimmer.
And Shane Rimmer, Scott Tracy, as well as all the other, you know, the fabulous things that he's done. So it's kind of a bit of a thank you, really, to Phil for giving me a bit of a wake-up call and giving me a bit of a kick up the proverbial butt to on with it.
He is our mystic motivator from LA.
Yeah, definitely. So thanks. And I'll send you some links if you've not seen it of the bits and bobs.
Oh, I have not seen it. Good. That was going to be my question.
Yeah,
I will
send you a private link. It's due for release in 2016, which doing the visual effects now, but I'd love you to have a look and see what you think.
That'll be fun. That'll be great fun.
Awesome.
Especially after my reviewing of Logan's Run on Alex's behalf. You know what, Alex? I won't give anything away because we'll talk about it, but I will say it's a little... The last time I saw Logan's Run, I was, I don't think, of the age to be renewed. Mm. And now I realize I'm much closer to needing to be renewed a second time.
Huh? renew.
It's very sad, isn't it?
Yeah, but you know, chronologically gifted, that's all we are. We carry on through in
how
our
does,
own unique
how does
way.
How does Farrah Fawcett get like top billing in that movie? She's on screen for what, 20 seconds?
Because it paved the way for her co-starring role with Kirk Douglas in Saturn 3.
Oh, very nice. Well played.
Jessica, any thoughts that you have for Phil about maybe he's just chosen to ignore Annette Andre's missive from America, Janine Barry's Midweek Drive debut, or indeed Jake Morley's Allegorical House?
Well, I think you pretty much just said it, Alex. Do you want to tell us more about that then?
In the remaining 2 minutes of the show.
Yeah, good luck.
I really, in the deep, deep throes of sleep that I was during all of what you just described, I nevertheless found them compelling and yet an underlying of sadness beneath them all.
Nice. Much like the official end of the program, which goes something like...
Time to go home, time to go home.
It is, for squirrels everywhere.
Andy Pandy's going home now, but he's coming again soon. Goodbye, children. Goodbye.
I think it kind of puts a nice full stop on the production, really, Alan. Darren. Alan, Darren. It's very confusing. I thought it was a reminder.
We should do a new version of that. Record it, because you have so many talented musical artists who are on the show. Have someone, you know, record a new version and have Annette Andre do the spoken word part at the end.
There we are.
Very yes. good. That's yes. such a good idea.
Let's do that.
We yeah. will make it happen. We will make it so.
Oh, and that's all they listen to in the future world of one of Darren's films.
Jessica, last two questions for Phil Linus, please.
Have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us this evening? Well, for you this morning.
Well, I am. Yeah, that's the point. Is I didn't want to make it seem like the early part of the show put me to sleep. I literally didn't get up until an hour.
It's what the podcast's for, Phil. That's what the podcast is for.
Exactly. That's what allows me to sleep soundly. Is knowing that the Siren FM podcast what is it? What's the website?
SouthsideBroadcasting.podbean.com. Although we're also putting some stuff on Siren's very own SirenOnline.co.uk these days. Yeah.
Oh, it's great. It gets better and better. All because of what you learned from your interview about the virtual world. Jessica, thank you for your well wishes, and especially thank you for all the effort you went through to interview me.
That's right. No problem.
Darren, have you
How come it didn't touch everybody the way that it did when the previous guest said it? I don't understand. I said the same words, Alex. The same words.
It's a different line. Naomi Costley, I think, is coming up with the next show after the news at 7 o'clock. Darren, have you enjoyed your production?
It's been fantastic. Loved it.
Are you back again soon?
Oh yeah, can't wait.
Yay! And Jessica back tomorrow morning.
Yes.
That's it. Thanks to Cameron Tilbury, Annette Andre, Jake Morley, Janine Barry, Peter Asher, Phil Leonis, and you, dear listener, for staying tuned to Siren 107.3 FM. Can we all say bye-bye?
Bye-bye.
Bye.